Well, it's a little more than 15 minutes. And Blaine represents Sertich. Where is he? He's the one that said it would take 15 minutes, so I take no responsibility for the 18 or 20 minutes it took. Senator Saltzman?
Yes, thank you.
We're going to talk for the next half hour, Madam Chair, or less if there's no questions, about the angel investment credit that the Senate has in the bill. And I thought it was pretty interesting. Some of the discussion here last night, as everybody knows, but there was a story in today's Star Tribune about a company. Did you see the story, Madam Chair?
I did. There are two members in our caucus who want me to be for this gave it to me personally today.
I just want to make sure you get your own copy, your own Senate underlined version.
What's the article and section number, Mr. Chair, on this provision? Article and section number?
Oh, on the side of my side. Yeah.
Article 1, section 7.
Thank you.
Article 1.
Page 1.
Section 7.
Oh, right here.
Article 1, Section 7 of the Senate bill, and the page on the side-by-side is?
11.
Page 11.
Oh, yeah.
Why am I having so much trouble?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, maybe, Senator Saltzman, I've distributed to the members of the committee the story by Thomas Lee in the Star Tribune. It was in the business section, Vital Medics, startup medical company born at the U of M, might relocate to the Badger State for lack of investors in Minnesota. Now, Senator Saltzman, I've had a busy day. All I've read is the headline, and I've heard people talking about it. And I think it kind of speaks to the issue in the Senate bill. So maybe, Senator Saltzman, let's start by you kind of summarizing what's in the story, because the chair hasn't read it. And then we'll talk about the angel credit and have your witnesses. Senator Saltzman, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Here, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be back tonight.
Senator Saltzman, did they have this much fun in education?
Well, Mr. Chair, we gave the House an offer today and took about a half an hour, and they went off and they're working on it, so I can be with you tonight.
Good.
So we're I appreciate all that you talk about in terms of education, because that's it's going to be a tough bill to put together, and that's why we need to build our economy so we have the resources to fund our schools and fund our health care. But what is about this story and Vital Medics is that Vital Medics discovered this particular product when it was studying the golden gopher. So to think that something that not only came from the U of M but was discovered when they were studying golden gophers, and why were golden gophers able to go into hibernation, and I'm not a biochemical major, so I can't explain all this, but why was it that the golden gopher could go in and out of hibernation and its tissue would, you know, remain alive? And so as they looked at this, they found this particular product. I believe it's called, I think it's called Tamiyosin is what they've named it. And what they have found is that they did additional studies on rats, and then they did receive some money from the U of M to do it on pigs, because that's most like humans, and found it very promising that when someone has had a lot of blood loss, either because they're on a battlefield or else in a car accident, you have a golden hour to get the victim to a hospital. And too often we lose people because we can't get them there. They're in a car. They can't get out. And so by being able to use this product with some sort of application device, you can extend the golden hour and keep limbs that might have had to be either, like, you know, severed, or keep the person alive. So this company right now, in fact, I went out to visit with them, and We took some of our business committee with us this past, I think October. We met with them, and they were looking for dollars because what they want to do now are like the human trials. And so they have looked at working with their hospitals here. They've applied for a DOD grant, which is the Defense Department, worked with Congressman Ellison to get some money there, but they need additional dollars. And this is because, again, it's not just jobs, it's advancing the product, and have not been able to find it. And because, as you can see from this article, Mr. Williams talks about that, he said, this past year has been the most difficult I have ever seen in my career. It's extremely difficult and frustrating. And this is a man who goes from company to company. This is not, he's not the, like, no chemist, but he's a person who puts together like a company, and he's looking now at how he's going to keep this really moving forward. And so he hears about this program in Wisconsin. He really doesn't want to leave Minnesota. He loves it here. But to advance a product like this that has such potential, to get it to the next phase, he needs those dollars. And because there is the Act 22 in Wisconsin that's able to incentivize people investing in a company, it's not just the credit or the grant, it's what that particular credit will leverage and incentivize people to take the risk. So what he has mentioned in this article is that there's a 60% chance he's going to leave. When I first heard about this story, I thought he was gone. And so I know there are people that are trying to work with him. And, you know, perhaps you know more about this, Mr. Bianco, but it's really a story because it's an example, and this is just one. There are many companies that are leaving, but when they leave, we don't hear about them. We don't know that they're going to leave because they just quietly go. So I think that's why this particular situation here is very troubling, because it came from the U of M. It came from physicians up in, I believe, Duluth, who are doing, you know, again, just like the research and discovered this. They weren't trying to discover this, but this is where these ideas come. But then to be able to apply them. So they have this product, they see the potential, but what's the next step? And that's where the angel investor credits would be very, very helpful. So, Mr. Bianco, would you like to add to that?
Thanks, Senator. Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, my name is Pete Bianco. I'm the Director of Life Science Business Development for Howland Health Consulting in Minneapolis. And this is, for me, probably this article today is really now based on my experience in my practice, where I help early stage technology companies, life science companies in various phases, but mostly what I've over the last 5 years have been working largely in Wisconsin, Arizona, and Ohio, but more now centered in Wisconsin on early stage technology companies moving out of the University of Wisconsin. In this particular case, this is now, in my mind, a direct line that you can draw between the success of Act 255, which was enacted in April of 2004, to an early-stage company with promising technology leaving the state and moving to Madison in what is now becoming nearing a tipping point. This particular company is the first one to emerge out of the re-engineered tech transfer process of the University of Minnesota. This is not the last one. This is the beginning, I think, of probably a steady wave of early-stage companies that, as they leave the university, they're not incentivized to stay in Minnesota, per se. The license agreements that are reached with these companies are for developing a technology and getting a life-saving or breakthrough technology into the public sector where it can do the most benefit. Whether that's in Minnesota or Wisconsin or anywhere, these companies are going to go where they can find the capital. In the last 5 years now, when Act 255 was enacted, it was $3 million of tax credits that stimulated $18 million of private investment, which started 30 companies. That has been so successful that this year they increased that tax credit to $15 million. They're reaching a critical point now where a lot of folks here that I know personally that haven't been technology startups coming from the university, but others from other areas, are now seeing this just across the border reaching critical mass. So this particular article today is not a surprise to me or anybody else that I work with. But I think it has been surprising the reaction that I've received in phone calls today, and I believe it's just the beginning of probably a more significant wave now that the university truly has a state-of-the-art technology transfer process.
Thank you, Mr. Bianco.
So, you know, perhaps Mr. Alexander could talk a little bit about, because I know you had a discussion about grants and the difference between grants and credits and what that does in terms of leverage and in terms of, again, like the process.
Senator Saltzman, why don't you, for the people who aren't following along and reading the spreadsheet, why don't you explain how the tax credit works, kind of
right.
What the criteria in the bill is.
Right. The investment tax credit is a 25% credit that is made to an investor. So we talked about the insurance pool last night. This is about an individual investment made in a business. There are some specific provisions, and I don't have your particular copy in front of me, but it has some qualifications of how much credit that a person can apply for. And this is much more like a limited. It's where an investor would then get a credit, would apply to the commissioner to get a credit so that you know how much money is going out. This particular bill started out at $6 million per year, and Senator Bach, I believe you've expanded it to $10 million per year. The way it would work is that it is limited in terms of the companies that that could be specifically invested in. It has to have its headquarters in Minnesota. I believe you kept some of this language. The business employees are employed in Minnesota. I believe you changed that to like 80%. Is that correct?
Sure.
The business is engaged in or like, you know, committed in specific technology areas. We've tried to target it to some of the most like the promising emerging companies. There are some specific areas that you cannot be engaged in, including real estate, insurance, banking, lending, lobbying, political consulting, information technology, and wholesale. The business has to have fewer than, I believe, 25 employees. It cannot be older than, I believe, 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very it's pretty specific in these areas. So it's really for smaller types of investments. It is a smaller pool than, say, the insurance pool that we talked about last night. But as we mentioned last night, angel investors kind of come and go, whereas venture capitalists are much more organized and managed. So this is for people who are maybe sitting there right now on their money and wondering where they want to invest it. And this is what's important about this program, because we talk about competition. It's incentivizing people to invest. It's not about going just to Wisconsin. It's just that people who have dollars might see this as an opportunity to invest. And part of this, of having this program, too, is that then you have an organized effort. You have to work with your economic development department to also, you know, make people aware of this program. So, and maybe you'd like to add to that as well.
Sure.
Some of the pieces of how these works and how you find investors. And the other thing that I think is important about this is that it's not just about the investments that come that match the tax credit. It's how many other dollars flow as well. So they leverage dollars beyond what the tax credit covers. And that's sort of historical data.
Right. Mr. Chair, Madam Chairman, my name is John Alexander. I'm here representing Twin Cities Angels, which is a member-owned and managed angel investment pool, very much of a club. To put my comments in context, I was brought here to Minnesota 17 years ago as an officer of St. Jude Medical. I worked there for 4 years, grew that business from $200 million to about $900 million. Have been a serial entrepreneur since then, and 3 years ago took the helm of a medical technology company, the same month launching Twin City Angels. We have a number of people, approximately 40 in the organization, that puts their hard-earned savings as well as their time into early-stage technology companies, mostly medical but also a little bit of IT and other businesses exclusively in Minnesota. Over the last 2.5 years, we've invested in 12 companies as a result of our first fund and are in the process of, with a new cash infusion, doing the thing in the second fund. An angel tax credit like this would allow us to invest in many more companies. But I think it's important to know that angels, in addition to putting their hard-earned savings into companies instead of the stock market, real estate, bonds, mutual funds, and other opportunities they have, because they invest locally. They invest in companies or technologies they care about. In the case of healthcare, things that might benefit them, their family, their neighbors, invest their time. And so you get people that are experienced, that have got expertise, that have been successful in their own professional environment, bringing that knowledge and that expertise to that company. So a company like VitalMedics that raised, as if I remember the article correctly, $600,000 locally, had access to those people that in turn had access to other people and other resources. And so a bill like this would allow those people out there that have discretionary savings to invest in companies, to take that money and incrementally make an investment into businesses locally that would employ more people, rent more space, use more services, put more products through a regulatory approval process that would allow for better medical technology, better information technology, better clean tech, anything that's appropriately sponsored by this bill. Credit does a great job of getting a multiplier effect. I mean, you've got a 25% credit here, so $10 million would bring $40 million out of the woodwork, which would be an extraordinary amount of angel money for Minnesota and would fund, based on the limits that you've got here, 20 companies a year, which would be many more than Minnesota has seen in my working lifetime in this state.
Mr. Alexander, thank you.
Certainly.
And also note, Mr. Chair, is that, again, that the credits are not applied immediately, that there is a four-year waiting period, so that, again, those dollars go to work and building jobs and, like, you know, creating companies before they are paid out. So that's something to note as well. And that, as we talked about in terms of the actual return, I think is sort of interesting. Mr. Alexander, you were talking about if it was 3 years or 4 years.
Most financial people look at money as having a time value. And so, for instance, if you put in a dollar today and get it back in 4 years, in a venture-like discount rate, that would mean it would be worth about 50 cents. And if it's 3 years, it's worth about 64 cents. And so when we look at the Wisconsin tax credit, they have a three-year period. I think there was an early draft of the bill that allowed you to take half of it in the year in which you made an investment and half of it the year later. The more value it has, the more money is going to come out of the woodwork in order to invest in these companies and create jobs and new technology, if that makes sense. The farther out in the future it is, the less valuable.
Right. I think Senator Skoy wants to speak to that. We've talked about this previously. Senator Skoy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Give me the reverse. You've given us the value of the credit
right
to the investor. Give me the reverse of the value of the money invested now, and the state is making the credit in 4 years or up to 10 years. Do you have a feel for what the reverse of that value of money is? See, the value from the state's point of view.
Oh, sure. So, for instance, if you put in a dollar today, as I understand, and my economics in this is a little aged, the multiplier in the private sector is 4, and then the public sector is about 1.5. And so when I get a dollar in the private sector, I'm going to use it to rent space. I'm going to use it to buy goods and services, buy equipment, hire people. There are taxes paid on much of that, and then it goes back in again. And so over the course of a year, that money gets cycled 4 times. So if I was looking at the value of the state, I would say if I spend a dollar in a tax credit today, it gets spent 4 times. You get the taxes on that, and then you get the taxes again on that the next year, and then the next year, and then the next year.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Alexander, I know about this much, which is real dangerous when you know about that much, but there's this rule of 72 that your money will, you know, you take your interest rate and divide it into 72, and that's how many years it takes to double. And do you have a feel for what kind of impact the dollar that is going to be invested in a business outside of this multiplying because they're buying stuff and everything? Mm-hmm. But there is some gain in value in the dollar because it's being invested today and the state's not paying the credit for up to 10 years. And if the interest rate on that is, well, if it was 7.2%, it would double. Well, it's not going to be 7.2%, but it's going to be some number in there that the dollar that you guys are investing is worth $2 by the time the state gives you your dollar. It's a credit.
I'm not following it. If I invest a dollar today and I don't get the dollar back for 4 years, it's worth less today.
To you, but
oh yeah,
do the reverse. From the state's point of view, it's worth, I mean, it's worth more to us because we're getting a dollar's worth of investment for 64 cents. So you do the reverse.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't know what that ratio is, either. But I know it's there.
Mm-hmm. So you're spending cheaper dollars in
dollars.
In the future to get more dollars today.
Absolutely.
Right. But if you extend that out so that is worth 10 cents, you will not create the behavior that you're trying to
sure.
create. But and so it's got to be worth a relatively high percentage of the dollars spent or that tax credit in order to people make the investment in the first place.
Mr. Chair, what my frustration was with the discussion, we actually had some of it in this room earlier today when we heard Senator Metzen's bill, but my frustration is you tend to take the dollar that gets, you know, that the investors spend, and then they just take and calculate, you know, how much money goes here and there, and it adds up to this 30-cent return on investment, but that's not really an accurate number because there's a value of money over time calculation that has to be factored into that. And I don't know what that is, but I know it's there, and we're not calculating that in anywhere in when we're doing this yet. And maybe it isn't significant, but it's certainly part of the formula, as demonstrated by the discount that those guys do on the other side.
Commissioner, did the governor have anything in this angel investment area in his budget? I don't remember. It's something that I believe we had some money in the Senate tax bill in 2007, at least, in the vetoed tax bill. Don't remember if we did it last year. Commissioner, where does the governor kind of fall on this?
Yeah, well Chairman, an angel investment credit has been a perennial favorite of the governor's. I think he's introduced a variation of the angel investment credit in four of his biennial budgets. And we've gotten close to getting it finalized, not quite pushed over the finish line. This year he did, in fact, have an angel investment credit. It's not so different than what Senator Saltzman is advocating for. There's some, you know, relatively minor differences. In some respects, I think the Senator Saltzman bill is a better bill, better than maybe even what the governor introduced.
A little less prescriptive. Could you say a little louder?
There's aspects of the Saltzman bill that I think are an improvement on the governor's original work product.
I knew you'd condition that if I asked the second time.
And your Senator Saltzman's bill is a more robust credit as far as the dollar amount. I think ours was $3 million a year for 4 years. Yours is $10 million a year for 4 years. But we do think, Chairman, maybe I can say one other thing. I think there's been a gap in our economic development toolbox. This is one of those gaps. And, boy, when I was at Deed, I saw many opportunities where we had investors interested in growing a business here or staying here. And we had other tools at our disposal, but they just did not fit the business model of what these folks were looking for. So we always identified it as a glaring deficiency in our kind of our economic development toolbox, and that's why the governor's been so persistent in coming back and advocating for the concept.
Well, Commissioner, if you and the governor would help us keep that compliance money in this room,
mm-hmm.
that $45 million net, and not let the state government finance bill spend it, we probably could get some of this done. So I appreciate it. I know I have expressed to Senator Pogemiller a strong desire for that compliance money to be spent in this room so that we can do some of this economic stimulus work that we'd like to do. So to the extent you could convey to the governor that we would do some important work with that money, I think right now today it's a better investment of that money in programs like this than it is on some new technology or new computers for our state departments right now. So, and I don't know what they're looking at spending it on over there for sure, but I think I've heard there's some equipment expenditures over there that they'd like to be able to do over in that bill. And I think right now today it appears to me at least to be more important than buying some new state computers or some new software that we invested in some job creation. So If you could just express that to the governor. I know we'll get that money in this room if he wants to spend it here.
Well, Chairman, that's going to be decided, obviously, up on a pay grade far above my own.
Not far above.
Far above my own. And but, you know, I have a little bit of dual loyalties here. I very much like the Angel Investment Credit, obviously. I've been advocating it for a number of years. I'm optimistic, regardless of where we book the state government compliance money, we can find a way to fund this and get our foot in the door and get something that's competitive with what Wisconsin has and some of our competitors. I have a little bit of a dual loyalty because one of the technology projects that's being funded in state governments is the integrated tax system, which really, if you are serious about tax compliance in the state of Minnesota, that is should be a very high priority for this committee as well.
Do you need that technology upgrade to score the $45 million net?
We don't need, Chairman. We don't need. There's not a direct connection between our compliance revenue.
Not right now.
But as you know, Chairman, we're in the middle of a four-year rollout for the integrated tax system. And to stop midstream would be unfortunate for not only the department, but more importantly for taxpayers, because it really is a compliance mechanism, a taxpayer-friendly system. So there's some. At this moment, I think the House has a reasonable position with regard to the compliance revenue.
Do you have anything on this?
Mr. Chair?
Sir, Representative Lanchesky.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do want to talk about the Angel credit, but I'm with the governor on where the tax compliance should rest, and it should rest in state gov finance. So on that piece, I'm with them. You know, like you've said, you don't need a tax bill. Well, if you put the Department of Revenue's funding over here, then you do need a tax bill.
Really?
Yeah. So if you leave it in state gov finance, you don't need a tax bill, because then the Department of Revenue can keep running. So, I mean, I do think, you know, I disagree with you, and Representative Seifert, when majority of the years I've been here, I was in the minority, and that's how Representative Seifert's party and caucus kept it in state gov finance, and I actually agree with the governor, and that's the House position, but different issue. So,
well, Madam Chair, you're making my argument. Spend the money here.
No, we don't need to spend any money. We need to.
Uh-oh.
We don't. We don't have all these spending items in our bill. You've got all the spending items, and so does the governor. Things like the Angel credit. So,
Madam Chair, you haven't been convinced yet? Unemployment's going to be 10% by fall, Madam Chair.
No, but I do.
The state economist said.
On a serious note, if I may, Mr. Chair, I do want to talk about this, though, for a minute, because I have to say that compared to the previous bill we heard that Senator Saltzman carried, I like this significantly better because it cuts out the middleman, the whole Capco thing where it goes to the insurance company and then off to the promoters and then to the investors. These organizations, Mr. Bianco and Mr. Alexander, it's going straight to the investors. So I think that's more efficient and it's a better return on the dollar. I continue to believe that a grant is a better return on the dollar than a credit. And I will remind, again, members of this conference committee who served on this conference committee in 2007, that we had an angel investor credit that we converted to a grant. That was done with all parties. That bill was vetoed, and we do have the veto letter. But that was not mentioned in the veto letter. Things like the Mall of America and other things were mentioned in the veto letter. But neither the historic credit converted to a grant or the angel investor credit converted to a grant were referenced as a problem for the governor. And we got that in 2007, but then the bill was vetoed. So I continue to believe these things should be grants because I don't think they're cost-effective or efficient. But I do want to say that our crack staff, Ms. Bergman and Ms. Carlson-Walrath and Ms. Senn, I don't know who found it, but listening to Mr. Alexander, when I heard him say Twin City Angels, I immediately thought this must be the guy I read about in the paper a while ago. And so it's interesting to me that today members of our side of the aisle and our caucus brought me the article that you brought today and wanted me to read it about that where Senator Saltzman is quoted. But I was interested when I read about the Twin City Angels, and I've got the article here, and Mr. Alexander is quoted, and I've never met him. I have met Mr. Bianco. We had a nice meeting, and I'll just pass it to members. And this was an article a few months ago about the fact that they were bringing in a second fund, and they didn't have an angel investor credit in Minnesota. And I'm certain Mr. Alexander thinks that's a good addition, as his testimony would indicate. But I just want to remind I want members to know that this fund, which I thought was very interesting, that was written by the same writer on January 31st, said, "For despite a tight economy that severely curtailed venture investment capital across the country, the Minneapolis-based Angel Investor Group is raising money for a second fund, having already dispersed at least $2 million to 10 startups that make everything from robots and medical devices to reusable envelopes and beer." And it's a very nice article about this gentleman's fund and his group, and I recall reading it and remember at the time being struck that, contrary to all the arguments that people said, this there'll never be another fund without an angel investor in credit, back in January, in fact, there was another one. So I'm certain that you know, Mr. Alexander, I would think, would, and his testimony indicates he would like that, as you know, that credit to be brought in. But the reason I bring this article forward and listening, I do read the business section very thoroughly all the time, and so I knew about this particular situation, and that's why I asked staff to see if they could search for it. And it was only when I heard TC Angels, but it brings up in my mind that, you know, what I would ask is, you know, how can we be sure that the credit won't go to people who were going to invest anyway? So, I mean, if the idea of the credit is it's going to get new people to invest who aren't already investing, how do we make sure that folks who are doing it without government subsidy aren't going to get it? And that's a pretty inefficient way when you're giving it to people who are going to do it anyhow and you're giving it to people who really need the money to do it. I think this is the problem with credits. They're just not an efficient way to do this stuff. And I guess, Mr. Chair, and maybe Senator Saltzman at a later time could show me or the advocates, Mr. Bianco and Mr. Alexander, others, you know, any studies that would show, and I think everyone can produce studies that prove their point, but I guess any, you know, sort of menu of studies that would show that, you know, this is really having the impact people want. In fact, I did include the research and development credit. I don't like those. I was worn down. That's in our tax bill. And I'll tell you that was mostly, it was based in part by popularity, but actually studies are, you know, beginning to show that, you know, there's a bunch of mixed studies, of course, there, but there's a number of now showing that R&D credits really do work. I am not familiar with any sort of academic studies that have showed that these angel investor credits work. And so they've been out there a while, and, I think it would be helpful, R&D credits, you know, there's becoming more and more data to show that they're having some impacts. I have not seen that yet in the literature, not produced by advocates, but by neutral parties. So maybe it's out there, and I'd be interested in reading it, but I have not yet seen it. But I did just want to highlight to members that this is, again, one of the problems, is how do you get some people who really need it to them? How do you figure out who really needs it and get it to them, and how do you not give it to folks who are going to do it anyhow? Because that becomes a waste of the taxpayers' money. So I guess those are, you know, some of the questions I struggle with these sort of issues. But I do like this one better than yesterday's.
Well, Madam Chair, I mean, the point is here is this doesn't cost anything until 2013. I mean, and these individuals put their money up and have to wait 4 years to receive their 25% credit. So essentially, that money's out working in the economy, and just the time value of money, I mean, having it in for 4 years before they can access a 25% credit, I mean, arguably, I think to Senator Scoy's point, it's not really 25%. And when we score $5 million here in 2013, that's not $5 million today. I mean, granted, the inflation rate is low right now, but we don't know where that's going to go, but I'm glad that you're warming up to the idea, Madam Chair. We got a dozen days left. And,
Mr. Chair, though, if I may.
Making headway.
You know, the investments in all the other government spending we do don't show up for years either. So, I mean, that's not compelling to me. I'll just be straight up. When we invest in early childhood, which in my mind is more the role of government or K-12 or higher ed, we take, 20 years to get that return. And we keep putting money at it because we know that actually has and the data will show, has a much better payoff for taxpayers to invest in sort of government's mission, and actually creates a lot more jobs, a lot better jobs, and a lot more investment in a better economy to invest in our education system. So I'm not so concerned about where it gets counted because, you know, I know what we make choices all the time here with budgets that we don't turn that three-year-old into somebody who's, you know, a legislator or the head of a DC Angels or who is Mr. Bianco or whatever. That all takes a lot of public investment, and the payoff takes a long time. You know, I'm just saying we're making choices here. We have a deficit, and this increases the spending. And so I just think with the deficit, we're going the wrong way when we keep thinking of more things to spend money on, and we don't have enough money to buy what we're even just plain old used to having, like health care for everyone. So, you know, I'm wrestling with it all, but I would like it as a grant, just like you did in 2007. I think that's the better way.
So, Mr. Chair, could we...
I had to give a lot up in 2007 to get the mall in that bill.
And I voted against that, too.
So, Mr. Chair, just a couple comments, I think, to get a response to some of those things, is that we do want a skilled workforce. But if our young people don't have jobs when they get out of school, our investments are meaningless. And some of the jobs that we're going to have to create, we don't have the resources. We are no longer a state that can just rely on our resources. Some of the things that have really created wealth in this state probably will not create wealth in the future. So be able to build this new economy and really tap into some of the things that we have the greatest potential to do. And the biggest difference between a grant and a credit is that if we had a grant program with this, like with these dollars, a company would get the amount of the grant. When you do a credit, you're getting, you know, four times that kind of investment in the company. That's where there is like the leveraging power. So I think that, you know, if Mr. Bianco could kind of talk about this and Mr. Alexander to talk a little bit about, again, what is happening on the front line, that would be very helpful.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair,
Bianco.
I'd like to just comment on something that you had mentioned earlier. The venture capital industry is big and deep, and there's a whole industry that studies it that could produce all of this data that you're asking for. Angels are a different item altogether. It's individual people who are tucked away in different places. There's not a really good system for tracking this, and specific to your question about, you know, whether these people would have invested anyways with or without a credit is, you know, to me is we have one group here, really, that does this in an organized fashion. When Act 255 was enacted in Wisconsin, they went from one angel investment group to 12 that were organized. And you could, as an entrepreneur or somebody who was spinning a company off of the University of Wisconsin, you knew where they were and you could go talk to them. Right now what it's like, other than John, somebody who spins a company off that's looking for money from angels has to call people, look for it, hunt for this money all over the place. There's no organized place. The tax credit truly did galvanize an organization around multiple angels coming together in different parts of Wisconsin to focus investments specifically on early stage technologies. I saw this with my own eyes, and all I can tell you is from someone who starts companies for a living and tries to build them, the hardest thing you're ever going to do is be a startup CEO of an early stage technology coming out of a university or wherever it's coming from. Because of all the other pressures on you, you have to raise money. Once you get past that, you're going to create jobs, you're going to hire people, you're going to get products to market, and it grows and grows. It's that first step that is really, really difficult, and it's hard to track, it's hard to find the money, and nobody really tracks this. But other states have now enacted these tax credits, these angel tax credits, and the data coming from Wisconsin now, based on 4 or 5 years of experience, is very compelling. The data is there.
Thank you, Mr. Bianco. Mr. Alexander.
Yes, if I might add to that, we are the largest angel fund I'm aware of in Minnesota. There are two others that are significantly smaller. We invested an average of $2 million in the last 2 years. We're 3 years old. It took us about 6 months to ramp before we started to do anything. Even if you were to say that there were five times as much money invested as what we invested, that would be $10 million. The bill that you have in front of you would allow for 40. It would radically increase the number of companies that could be invested in, the number of jobs that would be created. It would allow for the creation of some additional angel groups, and we welcome the competition because it spreads the risk and allows more smart people to get involved in early-stage companies and gives them a better probability of surviving and turning into the next Medtronic, the next St. Jude Medical, the next Simon Life Systems. You know, and we all benefit from that. And so I think rather than concentrate on making sure that every dollar is a new dollar. Look at the increment. You could get four times as much money invested with this program as it's drafted today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
And Mr. Chair, and with all due respect to Senator Saltzman and to you as well, Mr. Alexander, a grant does the exact same thing. A matching grant works, would we get for 10, you'd get 40. I'm just saying a credit is an inefficient way. The grant would work better. It would compete in the appropriations process, but I really would like to get more information that can, people can provide me. Mr. Michael gave me the NGA, you know, which people know is a good government group on best practices, and there's quite a lot here, and I will read it later, but he's highlighted one thing, and I think this is just one thing I just want to share, because I think what I'm trying to say is I don't think people know. And people sort of definitively assert that all these things work. There's not a lot of data out there, but here's what this says. There are many differences of opinion among angels, policymakers, and the public about the impact of tax credits on angel investment and sustainable entrepreneurial startups. Many angel investors are enthusiastic about tax credits because credits increase angels' return on investments. However, the economic benefits of the investment tax credit to states are unknown because of the lack of data and the difficulty of measuring economic impacts. Some believe credits likely increase the size of completed deals, but that they're unlikely to increase the number of ventures funded because they do not improve deal quality. Recent studies also show that the benefits of investor credits also depend on a number of factors, such as whether the credit is temporary or permanent. All I'm saying is, first of all, I think it's better in a grant, and I think the data is not very solid yet. And I think if we're going to go down this road, it should be in a grant, it should be going slow, and it should be based on some proof. Because all of these sort of credits have, you know, advocates. And there's not a lot of follow-up on what's the return on the dollar for the public who's being asked to chip the money in here. I mean, it's the taxpayer who's funding it.
Well, Madam Chair, on the grant versus the credit, I don't understand the math. If I'm a small startup company and I'm able to access $100,000 from the state because we have a grant, and I can get $100,000 for my startup business, but by the state offering the $100,000 credit to Mr. Alexander, I can get $400,000 for my startup business. I mean, I think that's the issue. And if I'm the small startup, do I want a $100,000 grant to help get my business started, or would I rather the state put that into a tax credit so I could get a $400,000 infusion of cash into my startup? I mean, I think that's the question. Is the state's $100,000 leverages the multiplier investment?
Mr. Chair, it does in a grant as well. Maybe Mr. Michael could walk through that exact same example, how a grant would work, because you have to do the activity to get the grant.
Excuse
if you
Mr.
would
Chair.
Permit Mr. Michael to just explain but exactly the situation you've laid out.
Well, Madam Chair, the issue is where does if the small startup business is just too risky to get conventional financing, who's gonna give them the financing? If the state grant is not enough money, there still is the gap. The gap is still there. If the $100,000 doesn't fill the gap, somebody still has to do the other $300,000.
So on that point, Mr. Chair, think.
Am I wrong about this?
No, you're right. And here's what I would compare it to. If you're going to give money to Minnesota Public Radio, and they say there's a matching grant of if you give us $50, they will give us $50. Maybe I want to give to Minnesota Public Radio, so I do their matching grant. I get nothing for it. But if you have a matching grant, or if you have a matching grant for a company, you know, the state could give them this, but what's my incentive to give the other three times that? If it's a grant, the difference between a credit is that it changes behavior. It changes the behavior in that it really gives the person who's taking the risk. If it's just a grant to the company, what is going to incentivize? Right now, VitalMedics potentially has $1 million DOD grant, okay? That's not leveraging four times the money from the private sector because there's no incentive for them, whereas a credit would incentivize people to put their money in because they are getting something back. It is a business deal. So I think that's the difference that I see between a credit that an investor gets versus a grant that a company gets. Would that be correct, Mr. Alexander?
Dead on. It's all about incenting the behavior of the investor and encouraging individual investors to take either incremental money out of their pockets or get new investors to put money into the market that they would not put into this particular market.
Mr. Michael, explain to me why Mr. Alexander is wrong. He's a pretty smart guy. He's an angel investor. He made some money along the way here.
Talking about different things.
But what are we missing here?
Well, I think it, Mr. Chairman, I think it all has to do with how you structure a grant. I mean, people have in their mind one kind of grant, but I think the idea here, well, first of all, let's go through their example to show sort of what the sort of the downside of that approach is. So let's say we're going to give the goal is to give $100,000 to encourage investment in a company. And so in order to do that, what we're going to do is we're going to give $100,000 to investors who will in turn then put up, what's the ratio, 300, an extra 300 or extra 400. So
75%.
But by giving $100,000 in tax credits to the investor, these are all accredited investors. So they've got net worths of $1 million, and they've got or incomes of over $200,000. Chances are that means they're going to be in the top federal income tax bracket. They're going to be itemizers. So 35% of the $100,000 we gave them goes off to the federal government. So when you're giving them $100,000, they get $65,000 to start with. So that's on the one side of the ledger. The other alternative is instead we say to the company, you go out and find 4 or 5 or 10 investors to give you $400,000. And when you tell us that you show that you've got that money, we will then contribute money into your company of $100,000.
Better
that
deal.
Will be equity, not to the state, but to these investors who have raised the other $400,000. Now, this company is a startup company, and so it doesn't have enough profits to have tax liability. They're burning money because they're paying their scientists and their engineers, and they don't have any tax liability. So that $100,000 goes right into the company. It increases the value of the investment to these angel investors. The company's worth more. Eventually, if the company succeeds, 5 years later, 4 years later, 10 years later, and becomes very valuable, that results much later in capital gain to those investors, gets taxed at 15%. 5 years later, present value money, much lower. And so basically you've traded a 15% export to the federal government right now to a 15% export to the federal government much later, but only if the company pays off. And so that's why we think the matching grant can be structured just like to have the same incentive effect as the credit. You have to give it on a first-come, first-served basis. And you'll get more bang for your buck.
But, Mr. Michael, we would expect Deed to go out and find these deals. They're our economic development authority. I mean, those deals, I don't think, are going to come to us. We have to go out and find them. And I would describe our job creation efforts at Deed to be feeble at best. And frankly, Iron Range Resources isn't much different. Economic development is really hard work, and government's not very good at it. Frankly, we need to incent other people to go out and find the deals. We're not, this government's not in the economic development business. We're just not very good at it. But other people are. And to the extent that we can incent them to go out and find the deals, the state's a big beneficiary when those deals come to fruition. And we ask people to take a lot of risk in these startups. And I just think incenting people to take additional risk is a benefit to the state. The grant program, Madam Chair. We haven't been very good at going out finding deals. I can tell you that's what we do at Iron Range Resources. That's what we do at
Deed. They do it.
And frankly, it doesn't happen. I don't see the incentive for them to go out and do it. We're trying to incent them. We're trying to incent more people to bring more venture capital type money into Minnesota, to create an incentive that people will bring money in here. If they deposit it short term in the state's general fund so we can use it for a couple of years, that would be helpful. But I don't think they're going to. But to the extent we can bring more capital into this state and incent that so that people in that kind of economic situation think there's really an incentive to come invest in Minnesota companies, that's to some extent worth some risk of some public dollars. We won't be adopting it tonight. Commissioner, anything further?
No, Chairman.
I need your help on this one. Mr. Alexander, Mr. Bianco, thanks for coming down.
Thank you very much.
Senator Saltzman, thank you. We'll talk more about this.
Well, Mr. Alexander, so we just had a couple of suggestions on some language.
If I may, on the third page, under Section H, when you're talking about purposes of the subdivision, when you mention medical devices and biotechnology, I would recommend you add the pharmaceutical and diagnostics sectors, because they don't fit under the first two categories. And, for instance, Vitamedics would fit under the pharmaceutical category.
Can you use that language once more?
Add where you have biotechnology or medical device, add pharmaceutical and diagnostic.
Do we have the new investment opportunities?
And then down in where you're talking about the qualified green manufacturing areas, I'd recommend an additional category to include technologies that reduce the waste products of manufacturing so that you decrease environmental damage as a result of waste.
Mr. Alexander, we will incorporate those in there.
Thank you.
If we can move something. Thank you. We really appreciate you coming down. We appreciate your investment in Minnesota. Except that we don't have the money today. Huh? This is... Madam Chair, the difference is this is $5 million in 2012, and they have to invest the money, or in 2013, and they have to invest the money today. We need investment today. And we don't have money to invest today, so when we don't, we have to ask somebody to invest today, and we'll, what Popeye say? Or Wimpy?
Yeah,
I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. Are you old enough to remember, Popeye?
Well, that was the line that suckers fell for, though.
Wimpy. Gladly pay you Tuesday.
You can't fall for that.
Don't pick on Popeye. He's an icon.
Well,
anything sacred. Mickey Mouse next? What do you got against Mickey Mouse? He's next?
I'm saying that the wimpy guy who said it, those smart people didn't fall for that. And they didn't give him the hamburger.
I don't like spinach either. Anybody like spinach?
Yeah. It's good.
Mark?
Yeah.
Spinach?
And ludicrous.
Me too.
I like ludicrous.
Is that spinach?
Mm-hmm. No, I just like sleep, Mr. Chair.
You wanted to be on this committee.
No, I
didn't. You know, Representative Seifert, we have a... It's not in our rules. It's not in our rules, but... we have a custom in the Senate that in order to be on a conference committee, you need to vote for the bill. And I understand the House doesn't have that custom. Might be something you might want to think about.
We have Representative Seifert here.
We want.
Did you right. You know what? If we would have had that extra money laying around, it would all have been spent. He was absolutely right.
Madam Chair, we'd still have it, but we'd still have it coming in every year, too. And now we don't have it coming in.
Nobody's right there. We've got any pot of gold laying around for us to solve the deficit that went from. We like Representative Seifert here. He keeps us focused on a moderate centrist Minnesota House.
Madam Chair, do you have any thoughts about what time we might meet tomorrow? We have quite a bit of work left to do here. Did we adopt anything today? Madam Chair, I'm pretty sure that Representative Reinert is okay with the. Can we adopt one thing?
No, he wants to be here.
Is there any one thing we can specifically adopt? One thing.
What if we adopt his thing, but then we'll make Aaron Murphy that. We need him to come. When is the seminar?
Noon, I believe.
Noon.
Are we going to meet before that?
You've got the gavel, Madam Chair.
People want to meet before that?
We can keep meeting right.
Deadline tomorrow at midnight.
We can keep meeting right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, if we don't start till when will we start? 3.
I've got a voicemail. I'm trying to find my calendar, Madam Chair. You didn't know also high tech,
you
did you?
Don't want to meet tomorrow morning. Just looking at everybody for a reaction.
Session at
9:30. We can't. So right after the last body adjournment?
Madam Chair, that was my point to leadership tonight when we met with them, is the House and Senate leadership need to line up these sessions together. We've just wasted 2 days because the leaders of the House and the Senate decide one wants to meet in the morning and the other wants to meet in the afternoon. They're going to expect us to get this done. We need to coordinate so that House and Senate meet at the same time. You're well aware I made that request tonight, and I didn't get a response.
Maybe we could urge the House leadership, Mr. Chair, to recess at 9:30 and give us some time to crack through some things. And then I'm the floor leader. I'm not missing votes. And our caucus will ask for a call of the House if we think we're going to be meeting in this conference committee while the floor is going. So we still have 10 members left. I know we don't have a big caucus. We have 10 people to ask for a call of the House when I have to leave. So, you know, we're not going to be meeting while the House is in session unless you want to remove me from the conference committee.
No, we don't want to do that. The House doesn't want us to.
So the sergeants will be down here busting us up if we're in floor session. And Zenja may be doing it in the Senate. So
after
good luck with that one.
Half hour until the last body adjourns. Try to get them adjourned as quick as they can.
Madam Chair, what I'm worried about is the Senate Finance Committee passed out 6 bills today that I think they plan to have on the floor tomorrow, but they can give us all the deadlines they want, but if they don't give us time to meet, it'll be pretty hard to accomplish that. I'm fine with half hour after. I mean, does that work for people?
Yes.
And, Madam Chair, if I could renew my request that Senator Scoy and Representative Marquardt work on the property tax article. Didn't go that well last time. I'm hoping that maybe.
Maybe Senator Johnson.
I still got all my notes.
Senator Scoy.
He doesn't agree.
And Senator Johnson reminded me of a provision that's very important to Anoka County that I need to make sure. I'm not sure where we have it buried in the bill, but I'll need to find
that. Is it a tax item?
No.
Oh, then no. We don't even need to know what it is. We don't want to do it. It's not a tax bill?
No. It's a levy limit issue for Anoka County that I think when the Senate presents it to you, you'll say, yeah, we should do that. Okay. But so Senator Johnson probably will bring that tomorrow. Senator Johnson, if you could find that language. Something specific for Anoka County that I just think in the event that we have some kind of a meltdown here in the end, I think Anoka County has a reasonable request that we should try and accommodate. And the sooner we can get that done for them, the better. Anything else, members? Madam Chair, where do we have your pork chop dinner? We want to make sure Representative Jeske takes that home with her. Probably a little cool by now, but Anything else? Anybody? Crack of midnight. We're adjourned.